It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 10. Hey everyone, welcome to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. Today's interview is with Rachel Barnum, a really awesome instructional designer who I follow on Twitter for some time now. Rachel has been in e-learning focused roles and more recently has transitioned into more of an instructor-led training design role. She has some super valuable advice on some of the intricacies of helping to design great instructor-led training, including working with SMEs, what a portfolio might look like if you're interested in this side of ID, and what it looks like to create effective face-to-face sessions. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Rachel. So Rachel, tell me a little bit about how you became an instructional designer.
So my journey is probably very similar to other people's, where I just kind of fell into instructional design. I was originally doing essentially call center work in a weird way, but basically being support. And through that, I got a job being an ed tech intern, but for a company that was transferring to a service, that was the same thing I was doing support for. So it was basically just kind of being that subject matter expert trainer at that company. And then from there, another company saw, oh, hey, she has a little bit of training experience, and I had messed around in Captivate. So they hired me on and trained me in Storyline. And that's where my real kind of dive into instructional design actually began, where I actually heard the term instructional design and started kind of calling that myself.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yeah. So would you consider yourself self-taught?
For the most part, I have taken some ATD courses and that sort of thing, but I don't have a master's or anything like that. All through reading and through social media and reading people's blogs and everything like that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's really good to hear. There are all kinds of paths to get into this work. Yeah, I'm mostly self-taught as well. Yeah. So, Rachel, what would you say are some of the best parts of your job?
I would have to say that it's not only being an instructional designer, especially my current job, I also kind of feel like a business analyst in a way, where through creating the training and poking holes in the processes and really coming through with, is this actually what we want to train? Is this process even correct? And so I get to really question the subject matter experts and everything along those lines. And it's kind of fun seeing this process that I'm supposed to be training actually being molded by me and my team as well.
Do you find that you get any pushback when you, question processes and things like that?
Oh, of course. but, it's worth questioning, though, because I'm coming from the perspective of the learner. I'm coming from the perspective of the person that's going to be doing that job.
So I was asking you about pushback. So what do you do to handle the kind of pushback you might get when you are trying to represent the learner, trying to do a good job, but you're having to poke holes in these things that may be sacred cows?
Right. Honestly, fortunately, a lot of the pushback I get is usually in the form of coming from their own perspective. So then I get to put back my own perspective. And eventually, you just know at the end of the day when it's no longer your turn to speak, I guess, so to say, is probably the best way to put it. At the end of the day, they have been thinking about these processes, and there's a reason that they're putting them forward that might not be known to me. And I don't make the ultimate decision, but I've been really fortunate in that, especially my current company is very open, to hearing critique and feedback and everything along those lines.
Yeah. So speaking of your current company, what would you say might be some of the things that are unique about your context in your field? How is working in your field as an ID different?
What I've seen so far, so my background is in multiple different things. It's, a little bit of medical, a little bit of, agency work and that sort of thing. But especially the projects that I've been working on, they're very critical thinking focused. So in medical, there's a importance in being consistent and doing kind of the same processes over and over and over again. And in my field, and especially what I'm currently training in, it's encouraged to think, encouraged to, just because we put this here doesn't mean it's going to be right. We want you to not be spoon-fed and not be always follow the exact same process over and over again. So that makes it for really interesting and challenging training, because obviously training is significantly easier when there's a process that's, pretty exacting, or you actually really have some sort of steps to take. And in this case, we're asking essentially just people who are in surveillance and things along those lines to really think outside the box.
And I mean, how do you go about doing that? How do you structure a training around thinking critically or creatively?
It depends from course to course, but what has made it interesting is I used to be very, and and in a lot of cases, I still think I'm in the camp of, it's not just about academics, right? But in this case, we end up kind of teaching at an academic level, because in order to think critically about something, you need to actually know the fundamentals of it. And so this being finance, you need to understand the fundamentals of finance in order to even think critically about it. So we kind of end up starting there, and we then have them take that knowledge that they learned and actually kind of just do their job in the training. While we have subject matter experts in the room, while we have facilitators in the room, and we say, okay, now you kind of understand where we're going. Here is the question. Here is the thing that you need to answer. Do it. Let us be here. We will help. Talk with your group among yourselves. So it's very much, yeah, it's just giving them the foundation, saying, and then saying, go. In some courses, we are even trying to do kind of a way of thinking activity where we kind of do these mind maps and everything along those lines in order to come up with kind of the answers to your job.
So would you say right now that a lot of what you do is about facilitating or helping others to facilitate face-to-face workshops? Do you do anything with e-learning or development?
Right now, it has actually been primarily designing instructor-led training. I will be facilitating in time as well some of this, but for the most part, it's been designing and then kind of working with the facilitators that we have in place to learn the material. But in the past, I've mostly done e-learning.
And do you guys, inside of these facilitator-led workshops, do you implement any instructional technology or educational technology?
Occasionally we do, but lately we haven't, just because this is kind of one of those projects that have such a tight turnaround. Being able to do something like that isn't currently feasible, so we have to do the best of what we can. What we do, however, is we do provide a training environment for them that's kind of the same field or the space that they work in every day to day, and then provide kind of this area that they can mess up in and do whatever they want, and it won't matter.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Safe space to fail. I am all about that. Okay. So what would you say, are methods or skills that you've developed to help you do your job better?
People skills. Yes. Right now, people skills. I am working on several different courses right now that all each have at least five different subject matter experts that each have their own way of communication and way of doing things, in terms of providing feedback. And so being able to not necessarily cater to every single one of them, because that would be next to impossible, but doing the best that I can in terms of wrangling all these people all the time. And on top of that, a lot of times as an instructional designer, your subject matter experts are people who are above you, right? In terms of rank, in terms of hierarchy and whatever else. So being able to be respected by them without with me also recognizing their rank, and they're very busy people. So just having those people skills, I think, is probably one of the biggest things that I've found to be really helpful.
How might you advise a newbie to practice those people skills or those wrangling skills?
Meetings, run meetings, you know, just get practice in running meetings and look up. I mean, there's so many videos out there. That's kind of one of those basic skill sets that, you know, are often in HR training and everything like that. But just good training. And every single time, I think, in addition to running meetings and speak on the phone, email is so important too. So also looking into business communication skills and practicing those as you write your emails, don't ever send them immediately. Go back, see what you can be more concise about, think about what can be confusing to somebody, and think about, you know, their perspective, what might come off wrong to them, as you write your emails.
Cool. Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you for that. So what would you say your model or process for a kickoff or a collaboration is, and why does that work for you?
So it's obviously, it always depends on the project itself, but it's often taking that step back. We often want to just launch into, here is what I need from you. But taking that step back and saying, here is even the purpose of what we're doing. So here's why we're doing this. Here's who it's for, kind of starting with that granular background of that, the project, and it, even just the, yeah, just the why of that is occurring. And then from there you say, this is what we expect from you. This is what we'll need from you. This is what, you know, maybe even just the amount of hours. A lot of people want to know how much time this is going to take away from their day-to-day activities. So just how much time you expect them to be spending on this. And a lot of that isn't something that you should even be coming up with yourself a lot of times. You know, the business should be giving you, you have this percentage of the time for this subject matter expert.
Right.
You know, so it shouldn't be something that you as the instructional designer should be telling them. It should have been something that somebody else is telling you, that you get this subject matter expert for this amount of time. So hopefully that always helps with that, because it's always such a weird thing. Like, I need you for 10% of your time.
Yeah.
Even though that's probably one of the things that they care about the most. So,
I mean, so how does that work for you? Do you get doled an assignment, or how does that work?
So, like, in terms of getting the projects and everything like
yeah.
that? Yeah. Yeah, it... Pretty much, yeah. So it's being given the assignments, being essentially, I end up typically being essentially the project manager in it. And then we move forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what has been your biggest challenge in working with SMEs?
Agreement among them. This is something that was always kind of fun, especially when you have so many subject matter experts on courses that are very subjective courses. You know, like I said earlier, they were, you know, very kind of critical thinking focused. Therefore, the content of itself is subjective. So a lot of times they would have discussions and then they would just stop, because they've all decided that they disagree. They just won't, you know, come to a consensus. So then I finally, you know, based on everything they've said, I'll try my hardest to come up with, you know, like a medium ground and just say, this is what I'm writing. Will everyone say okay? You know, 75% have, okay, that's what I'm going with. And then we move forward. But consensus is always the biggest thing.
How many SMEs are typically working on your project? I think I've at the most maybe had two.
Oh, wow. So I'm currently working on 4 different projects, and each of them have at least 4 to 5 SMEs.
Wow. That's a lot of cooks in the kitchen.
It is. It is. In the past, I'm very used to only working with a SME or two. So this has definitely been a different experience.
So what do you find helps you to build relationships and trust when you're working either in a new organization or with a new set of SMEs?
Whenever I ask for things, so this is, I guess, part of the kind of communication, I often phrase it in, asking for a favor, as though we already have that established relationship. And I feel like it makes people feel, oh, she's including me, she likes me, she's asking me for a favor, she's coming to me. So oftentimes, especially with having so many SMEs, if there's minor questions, I will pick, you know, just one or two to go to with that particular question. And it helps with, you know, building that rapport in terms of I get that one-on-one FaceTime with that SME, just because it's just this one question. I'll get consensus from the rest of the SMEs later, but I can just call this one SME up, get one-on-one FaceTime, talk to them, get the answer, and it makes everyone feel good. The other thing I do, because I end up traveling a lot for my job, we have offices all over the country, and all of my subject matter experts are from all over the country, is whenever we do travel, you know, we take them out to eat, we go, you know, we just hang out. We don't just talk about work.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, your story actually reminded me of something I read about Benjamin Franklin, actually, about how there was this one guy who didn't really like him. And so Benjamin decided to ask him for a favor, ask him to borrow a book. And in doing that, he knew that the guy would say, you know, I would never loan a book to somebody I didn't like, so I must like this guy. So that was really interesting. Yeah.
You probably heard that, and that's probably where that kind of idea came from, where I try, because I do like everyone, you know, there's not anyone I don't like, but to help them get to know me, asking them for that favor, just builds that one-on-one.
That's awesome. Good stuff. So here's a question. You're working with all of these different SMEs, you know, they have their language, obviously. Do you ever try to educate them on the language of design, or do you say, we'll put that away and I'm going to speak your language?
I often do the speak your language part of it, unless it's going to be a subject matter expert that I'm working through several courses. Mm-hmm. Especially because their language is already a lot for me to learn, not right. Coming from finance. So a lot of times I'm already asking. And for the most part, I end up explaining things in terms of, I guess, essentially like real world stories. Like, rather than saying, this is an instructional design concept, I say, here is what has worked for me in the past, or here is what has worked for a colleague in the past, and here's why. But, you know, I'm not saying, you know, whatever it is, like whatever instructional design concept is, I'm just showing it in action, telling it about it in action.
So in my work, I'm in higher ed. I know sometimes with some faculty, it's really important to come armed with research, because they're always asking, well, how do we know this works? Do you find that you need to do that, or is the storytelling enough?
Occasionally, I will do research. It really depends on the person. I do have one kind of main subject matter expert that I will use research with. You know, I will occasionally walk into his office, and if he doesn't believe me of an instructional method or anything, I'll go grab one of my books off the shelf, bring it into his office, and say, mm-hmm. here. And he appreciates that. But some people wouldn't like that. So it just depends.
Okay.
On the person.
Okay. Yep. How do you tackle trying to maybe implement a new idea?
I typically will run it across by a couple people first. So, you know, a couple of people that will give me their feedback will help me refine that idea, but they don't necessarily actually have influence on the idea itself. From there, I'll kind of just start sneaking it up the chain. I'll go to my boss first and see how she reacts to it. I'll go, mm-hmm. you know, and then it just moves up from there. So I guess it's sounds like super vanilla way of doing any idea of implementation, but I think really good just getting that feedback from other people to begin with to see is a good idea before I start taking it up the chain. Mm-hmm. It's something that's just very helpful.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I find that it is really helpful to go and pitch your idea to somebody who will give you useful and honest feedback.
Yep.
So what do you look for in an instructional design colleague or employee?
diversity in terms of kind of their work experience, what they're able to do, their skill set, and also diversity in what they want to learn. So does this person only ever want to learn this one single thing? And that, to me, tells me that this is what they want to focus on. And just for my current line of work and what we do, having that just diversity of skill sets and backgrounds and even in what you want to learn is just super helpful, because every single day you can be doing something a little bit different. If I were in a different field or a larger company, I would potentially look for somebody that has a much more siloed skill set. But here it just really helps to have that differences and experiences. I also look for just kind of a natural curiosity to figure things out.
Awesome. So portfolio wise, given your context, the fact that you said you would value diversity in your particular context, what would a newbie ID, what kinds of things do you think they should have in their portfolio?
I do think that a newbie ID, it does help to at least, and I don't know, maybe this isn't true, but I have noticed that at least helps in terms of the quality of a portfolio. If they focus in on at least something like just e-learning or just instructor-led training, obviously a lot of skills still come through that, you know, in e-learning and everything else. You know, you can definitely show off coding and graphic design, and even instructor-led training, you can show off graphic design, PowerPoint skills, and that sort of thing. But it really increases just the quality of the portfolio. You just kind of start somewhere and become an expert in that. Or not an expert, but just more than an amateur.
Right.
And then from there, you have now this quality portfolio. It might be a little bit siloed, but you still get to show off multiple skill sets. And then if you wish to dive into something else, at least you have that foundational, more than amateur skill set ready to go.
Okay, that's good advice. So you mentioned presentation. What would, if someone was interested in instructor-led training and facilitating that sort of thing, what would their portfolio look like?
It could look like a facilitator guide with a participant guide, and maybe any handouts or anything like that that would go along with it. You know, maybe just like an hour-long course, you know, an hour or two-long course where it just shows off, you know, one activity, the participants and what they receive with that. So that could be one thing. If they were actually interested in facilitating, they could even just do a video. And I know that videos are hard if you're trying to do activities and nobody to do an activity with, but if you just do a video of your presentation skills in general, you know, how you communicate to others, and just having a variety of those types of things.
Okay. That's good. What is one skill that you would think newbie IDs across the board should develop?
You know, I'm still going to, well, I was going to latch on to communication, but I think I'm going to take that back and say curiosity. I think that one of the things that I don't want to say frustrates me, but it probably does frustrate me, is when I'm working with instructional designers who are working with SMEs and don't have that natural curiosity to dig more, you know, really grasp everything that there is to go into this course that will potentially help a learner.
And would you say that curiosity sort of takes the form of asking good questions?
Yep. Asking good questions. That's probably the better skill set to focus on. Ask good questions and know when to ask good questions as well.
Yeah. So, Rachel, I was just looking at your blog, actually, and I noticed that you just recently released a post about blogging and encouraging others to blog. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, and I think my last post before that had been in October, which is a really long time not to blog. And for some reason, just during that time frame, I had a few different changes going on in my life, and I only wanted to read deep, meaningful things. You know, that was what I wanted to read. I wanted to read, you know, life-changing articles and that sort of thing. It's just kind of my mindset at that time. And suddenly I felt like I also needed to write these kind of things that were deep and really engaging and everything along those lines. And suddenly I received a message on LinkedIn where somebody had pulled up, I mean, it was actually, I think, only two or three blog posts before the last one I had done, but it was just this really short blog post of just this kind of little mini revelation in my head that I'd had about essentially just making learners' tasks not suck. So not, you know, every single task that you train won't be fun.
Right.
You know, answering phone calls, you know, day in, day out isn't going to be that fun. But rather than trying to focus on how to make it fun, which often just turns into these cheesy things that people don't take seriously, focus on making it suck less.
Yeah.
Moving will always suck, but working out before moving will make it suck less, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And with that article, this, some of you contacted me on LinkedIn saying, you know, that had actually completely changed their mindset, and she totally revamped how they did their program. And I was like, are you serious? That was just like a little thing that I had one day when I was moving. Cause I was just like, oh, how could this suck less? That's all I care about. How do I make this suck less? So it was just a very interesting thing. And I realized that I don't always need to have that revelation, but I also realized that's where a lot of bloggers get stuck. They don't feel like they have anything important to say to get started, even though they want to write. And it's not always about having that extremely important thing to say. Sometimes it's just having this little idea that you had that day and putting it out there, and it could reach somebody.
That's awesome. Yeah, I agree with you. There is always this tension of what do I have to add to the conversation?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. All right. So, Rachel, are you ready? It's time for the rapid fire.
Okay.
Okay. Instructional designer or learning experience designer?
Oh, wow. Learning experience designer. That sounds nice.
What is one piece of advice you wish someone had given you as a beginner ID?
How to email. How to email people.
What books, blogs, or research are you reading lately?
Design for How People Learn. That's always my go-to. And then for blogs, you said you interviewed Brian Washburn. Because I'm new to instructor-led training, I frequent his blog really a lot.
Awesome. Yeah. What's one thing, and we covered this a little bit, but one thing that should be in every ID's portfolio?
Something quality that represents what they do. You know, whether it's instructor-led or e-learning or whatever it might be, just one quality piece, that one big mama.
What is one piece of interview wisdom?
Oh, wow. At the very end of the interview, ask for feedback. And you ask as one of your questions, you know, you're always supposed to come prepared with questions. I always ask, is there anything that you would feel that would make me not a fit for this position?
Oh, that's a cool one. Favorite project that you're working on right now?
I am working on projects about money laundering and fraud.
Nice. All right. Last but not least, where can people catch up with you?
OhThatRachel.com or at OhThatRachel.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel.
Thank you.
Man, I love that Rachel was able to expand our ID universe by talking about her current context as someone who designs face-to-face experiences. That is so valuable, and I want to make sure that this show talks about all of the different avenues and pathways that make up instructional design as a field. If you've got some time, please make sure to contact Rachel via Twitter at OhThatRachel, and show some love for her taking time out to share her experiences with us. As always, we also want to hear any follow-up questions you might have. You can reach me at AnthChris on Twitter or at Kristen@DearInstructionalDesigner.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk with you soon. Take care.